Political Pulse is made possible by listeners and by Lee Auto Malls, offering new and used vehicles to help Mainers explore the beauty of their home state. Learn more at leeauto.com.
And welcome to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz, today with senior political correspondent Mal Leary. Steve Missler is off. Colby College has released results of a poll that covered the major races and plumbed some of the political thinking of Mainers. Mal Leary covered the poll as it was released, and he is joining us today for the other information that we have yet to unpack. Mal, welcome.
Hello, Erwin. There's a lot of information, as you would expect, today. Survey of this type.
Well, you know, often the most important thing about polls, as you know, isn't so much what they say, but how they're conducted. So talk to us about the method behind this poll and what it tells us about the validity of the results.
Well, some quick history here for folks who don't understand how polling works. It's changed dramatically in the last 5 or 6 years. It used to be you could find enough people on landlines to reach a good sample that represented the folks in a particular area, be it a congressional district or an entire state. Well, that has changed because most of us now have cell phones, and I know my kids only have cell phones. They do not have a landline. So you've got to come up with a method of reaching those people. So the poll has a mix. It is both landlines, it is cell phones, and it is some internet queries. Now, you say, how do you come up with that? Well, it's as much art as it is science. And in terms of Colby, I think I have a pretty good confidence in their methodology because it seemed to work last spring. That particular survey was very close in terms of looking at where Sarah Gideon was in the race for the U.S. Senate among the Democrats, but also was very good in looking at Dale Craft's leading in the second congressional district Republican primary for Congress. So using those two as indicators, the methodology seems to be pretty much on target, as much as anything can be these days. I mean, all the big pollsters are spending a considerable amount of money, time, effort to try to come up with the right mix of phone calls through landlines, the traditional methods, the cell phone calls, and the use of internet-only connections, and put all of that together to come up with a representative sample of a particular political subdivision, be it district, state, county, or whatever.
All right, well, let's start to dig into the results, and we'll start with what the poll showed about the presidential race in Maine.
Overall, Donald Trump is not doing too well in our state. Among all respondents in the entire state, he's at 38%, with presumptive Democratic nominee Joe Biden at 50%. Now, what's interesting is the Colby methodology did not ask specific names of other candidates, but asked if people supported other candidates. And in the race for president, 5% of the respondents, which is a significant number, said other, without the poll determining who those folks were. And it has an undecided of about 7%. So clearly it is Joe Biden's race in Maine overall. Where it starts to get interesting, Erwin, of course, is the traditional split between the congressional districts. Maine is one of two states that splits its electoral votes by congressional district. So you can pick up two votes for taking the whole state, and then you can pick up a vote both in the first district and the second district. And in the second district, that is exactly what Donald Trump did in 2016. But he's down in this survey in the second district slightly to Joe Biden. Biden at 45, Trump at 42. Interestingly, undecided 9%. So the second district has a lot in play that indicates that Trump still could end up taking the second district, or it could go for Biden and add to his very strong margin of 55 to 35 in the first congressional district. So we have to wait and see how all, of course, how all of this plays out. But that's a pretty big undecided still in the second district, and there's room for movement there, so that you could have Joe Biden take that district as well.
That congressional district is also interesting because second district Democratic Congressman Jared Golden, who was elected 2 years ago, is making his first run for re-election. Did the poll tell us specifically about the status of that race?
It did. And I think that's because we had the fact that there was a contested primary there to go up against Jared Golden, as opposed to the first district where there were no contested primaries. It shows Jared Golden at 45% to Dale Craft's 33%. What is amazing there to me is Jared Golden is the incumbent. He should have all the advantages. Dale Crafts, while he won his primary, really did not have a lot of resources in that primary. Didn't see a lot of ads, certainly not as many as you saw in the Senate race for Dale Crafts. And he still is picking up 33% of the vote. And 17% of the sample here in the second district say they're undecided. So there's plenty of room for movement, even in the second district, with Golden having a lead, and I'm sure he's happy to have a lead. But it's certainly not that magic 50 plus one that incumbents like to see this point of the campaign.
Yeah, and one of the reasons they like to see that 50.1 at this point in the campaign is that very often that undecided vote tends to break for challengers by a fairly hefty margin come election day.
Exactly, and you never know exactly how that undecided is going to break. And the reality is, pollsters will tell you that a good chunk of that undecided won't vote. Mm. So it makes a change in that difference in terms of what might happen in that race. So again, second district, Jared Golden's got the lead. He's the incumbent. You'd expect to have the lead. He's got the money and the resources. But Dale Crafts, I think, is in a position where, because of his tying himself to Trump in the second district so strongly, that he could pick up some of those undecideds who may be saying, well, is this guy really for Trump among Republican voters? And if that happens, then he has the chance of moving in striking distance.
Well, perhaps the most consequential of the races Mainers will vote on in November is for the U.S. Senate seat now held by Republican Susan Collins. That, of course, is because it's one of the Senate races that could be crucial to whether Republicans maintain their Senate majority or whether Democrats take control, which, of course, perhaps could mean giving them control of the White House and both houses of Congress for the first time since Barack Obama's first term. So, Mal, what is the poll showing us about the Senate race?
The numbers are not all that different than we've been seeing in other public opinion polls over the last several months. Sarah Gideon in the lead at 44% to Susan Collins, 39%. What becomes interesting in this particular race is some of the internal numbers. For example, other candidates, and we know there'll be at least two on the ballot, are picking up 6%. Now, why is that important? That's important because we will decide this race by ranked choice voting. So we don't know how those folks who say they vote for Lisa Savage will mark a second choice or a third choice, or Max Lynn a second choice or a third choice. We just don't know. And who will they mark them for? And if the race is close and it's not a runaway now for Sarah Gideon by any imagination, with 12%, remember, we have seen a record amount of television ads, just unreal, huge amounts of advertising for months now, and it's still 12% undecided. That tells the pollsters that there's still room for movement in that race, and they're not counting out Susan Collins, even though Sarah Gideon is in the lead right now. This has got a long way to go in the next few months. We have all of the factors going on in Washington that will play into this, as well as the presidential race will, of course, play into this. I would point out that already Trump has, as they say, boots on the ground in Maine, working very hard. And he's not working just for him. He's working for the whole Republican ticket. So there's a big attempt there that's going to have some benefit, I think, and it turning out Republicans that might not normally turn out. So there are so many moving parts, particularly in the second district race. The one that strikes me the most, though, is after all of this huge expenditure by both candidates in terms of Gideon and Collins, you still got 12% of the people polled here saying they're undecided in the race.
Is that something you've seen before in other races?
You got to start using the word unprecedented when you start talking about this particular year. I mean, not only is the pandemic having a huge impact on the election and the ability of candidates to campaign, it's changing the way people are looking at politics in general. Because they're home, many of them are home, they can't work, or they're working from home, they've been bombarded by these ads. So in the past, with this kind of heavy advertising, so many months before the election, you'd expect a very small undecided, that people would have been driven to make a decision because of one ad on one particular issue or another. But they haven't. It's still at 12%, which means that race still has a considerable amount of volatility. And again, unprecedented, because what happens in Washington? What do they do or not do to help the country get out of this economic crisis caused by the pandemic is going to have an impact on these elections.
You know, just to be fair, we should point out Maine's first district Democratic Congresswoman Shelley Pingree is also standing for re-election this year. But Mal, I take it her re-election is probably as close to a sure thing in politics as you ever get.
Well, the problem there is, of course, the Republicans have a nominee who had no opposition, so he really didn't pick up any sort of name recognition in the primary, which is always helpful to a challenger. He's Dr. Jay Allen. He's going to be have a paucity of campaign resources, at least it appears that way so far, from his federal election reports, that he's going up against a well-financed candidate who's been reelected now for over a decade. So yeah, you're probably absolutely right. And I'm guessing here, because I did not ask the question of Dan Shea up at Colby College, why they didn't particularly poll in that race. But my guess is they wanted to save the questions for other races that were far more interesting and issues that are far more interesting than it would have been to use that resource, that time, money, dollars that it takes. These polls are not cheap. It takes tens of thousands of dollars to reach a sample of 888 people that is somewhat representative of an entire state.
Well, you mentioned issues. One in particular that will, I'm sure, factor into the campaign, the revival of the Black Lives Matter movement in the wake of George Floyd's death. What, if anything, has the poll found about where Mainers stand on that issue and how that may play into things?
Well, actually, we're tracking pretty well with the national polls. A specific question was, since the video of George Floyd's death by a Minneapolis police officer went public, protests have erupted. How supportive are you of these protests? Now, among all of the respondents, you had 25% saying they were very supportive and 28% saying they were somewhat supportive. Those are big numbers for people saying they're supporting protests that have been denounced by the president and others as nothing short of riots. That was very interesting. The next question in the area of this was, given what you've heard about the Black Lives Matter, how supportive of it are you? And again, you had this very strong number of 30% of support Black Lives Matter as they understand it, at 34% somewhat support. So again, these are big numbers that seem to be tracking what we're also seeing in national polls, where there is strong support on these issues that have erupted as part of our election scene, as you point out, that wasn't there a few months ago.
Yeah, and it probably reflects, too, when we look at the results to date in the presidential race as well.
I think you're probably correct there. But what's interesting also in Maine is there's a difference of opinion when you talk about this proposal to defund the police departments. The question was very carefully crafted. Do you favor shifting some funds from police departments in your community to support social programs in your community? And there, the strongly support dropped dramatically to 18%. Somewhat support, 25%. Plurality, 34%, strongly opposed that. And when you add somewhat opposed, you're hitting almost 50%, saying they did not support that kind of a shift. So it's very interesting to see the dichotomy here between saying people are supporting these protests and at the same time not going all along with some of the demands of the protesters.
Well, Mal, as always, thanks very much.
Thank you, Erwin.
Maine Public's senior political correspondent, Mal Leary, and that is Maine's Political Pulse for this week. The Pulse podcast is usually updated on Friday afternoons. Now, while you found it somehow this week, it is available at our website, mainepublic.org, as well as other places where you might look for podcasts. We air most of the Pulse on Sunday mornings on Weekend Edition, and there's an excerpt on Monday's Morning Edition as well. Willis Ryder Arnold is our producer. Music is by Rob Holt. I'm Erwin Gratz. We'll talk with you again soon.